Now we're moving on to the bird flu season, it seems like. The narrative is in the papers, in the press.
Be prepared. Don't be scared. Be prepared. So, you know, this emergency medical kit, extraordinarily important, in conjunction now with the newer, the contagion kit. And, you know, we tailored the contagion kit to really combat this potential avian flu. It has hydroxychloroquine in it, which appears active, Todd, against H5N1. And also we have Tamiflu in it. Every American household should have both of those kits in their homes. They're going to pull the same nonsense about withholding drugs and not allowing you to have the drugs that are safe and effective, but push the deathly drugs on us like they did, like they've done for the last 4 years. I think there's, if I counted them up correctly, there's 14 potentially life-saving prescription medications in there. And, you know, you can't go to a doctor anywhere. No insurance is going to cover that. No doctor is going to write you out a script to prevent, you know, just to have on hand. They can't do that. They don't do it. Good luck trying.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Everybody, I'm Christine Dolan, and Todd Wood, our colleague and founder and CEO, is in Paris, and we were going to be joined today with our dear friend and contributor Laura Logan, but unfortunately, she has a frog in her throat, so she is not with us, but she will be back. I promise you that. Todd, tell us what's going on in Paris. You're over there. I want to hear all about the politics and the conference you're at.
Well, I'm here for the MEK, or the Mojahedin-e-Khalq, the Iranian Resistance Free Iran Summit 2024. It's a massive organization. There are tens of thousands of people across Europe, not just in Paris, but in Berlin. And I'm underneath a pattern way for the Charles de Gaulle. So I apologize for the jets flying overhead. But so this is a massive event. It's global. It's across Europe. Organizers and demonstrators are protesting against the Iranian regime, which is very weak right now because of the death of President Raisi. And that has caused a lot of focus on this issue across Europe. So that's why I'm here. But of course, while I'm here, I'm doing a lot of interviews. I'm going to be interviewing several French politicians on Monday based on our contacts here, a lot of populist leaders that could be in the government if it falls, if a new government comes online, if Macron's government falls. And the situation with Macron is that he did so bad in the elections, below 15%. And so there's about 75%, they think, of the country, 74, 75, that is against him coming back into government. So he called a new election, and he did something which technically is illegal. He called the new election earlier than it should have been. It should have been 4 weeks from when he dissolved parliament on the 9th, but he's holding it on the 29th. And that, they think, is an attempt to try and prevent people from getting their act together for the election in time. So a lot of, just like in the U.S., a lot of machinations going on to jockey for power, some illegal, semi-quasi-legal. And but, you know, the real worry with Macron is he going to, which he can under the French Constitution, declare some kind of emergency and take dictatorial powers. So we'll be watching for that. Check out our interviews Monday with politician, I forget his first name, Asselineau is his last name, a very famous populist here, and a couple others. And but the French economy is in shambles. The crime is horrible. It's just like what you're seeing in the U.S. The medical system's destroyed. The schools are destroyed. And the people are angry. And so the real question is whether they will actually do something and prevent a new Macron government.
Are they talking about the avian flu over there at all? Or are they talking about, you know, are they still mad about all the COVID?
You know, I don't find the anger here with COVID, even across Europe, from what I'm being told. I think it's just one of those things you don't talk about in Europe. And I find that fascinating because of all the deaths. I guess each country is different, but it's not as big of an issue in here as it is in the U.S. And I think it's more of something they just can't really talk about, because that opens a whole can of worms of, well, then we have criminals running our government, and what about our medical institutions and all that? So I think it's more of a pride issue than anything else, that they just don't want to admit what was done to them as a country. But the immigration thing and the economic issues are massive here, and people are very, very angry.
Do they have the same type of crimes related to the illegal immigrations that's happening all over Europe that
yes.
we have here in the States?
Yes, a lot of rapes, a lot of, you know, it's a very, France is a very mixed population, as you know, having traveled and done work here yourself. And but it's become more dangerous. There are a lot of no-go areas in Paris and other cities, mm-hmm. just like around Europe, just like in the UK, like what's happening, becoming in America with all these illegals coming in. They're several years ahead of us with this illegal immigration, being forced upon them. So, but now I don't know if it's too late or not, but they are awake. And so there's a level of anger here that hasn't been here before. And, you know, Le Pen is trying to, I guess, make nice and say the right things and try to get elected. And whether she becomes the president or the prime minister, we don't really know. It's kind of like in the U.S. where you just don't know what's going to happen. It's the same here. If you were looking at it from a logical, historical sense, you would think, yes, she's going to become leader of the country. But with all of the machinations going on behind the scenes, it's kind of day by day, just like it is in the U.S.
Are people in France, I guess the question I want to ask is, are they paying attention to politics right now? Now that Macron has called for this election, are they engaged?
Yes. And all of the other parties, including some left-leaning parties, gained a lot of support because Macron's party lost a lot of support. So Le Pen and her organization are still, you know, above 30% and the largest, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of other smaller splinter parties that all of this will have to make a deal to form a government. So I think that's what's going on with Le Pen. She's not being very firebrand. She's very, very measured and calculating to try to get, you know, gain power. Because once you do that, then, you know, all bets are off and you can really make some changes. But I don't know. I honestly don't know what's going to come. I'll tell you one thing that really fascinated me was we had a lot of American politicians speak at this conference who have supported the MEK for a year years. It was Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, Tillis, Sheehan, you know, senators from both sides of the aisle. And what I found striking was they all said, well, in the free world, you know, we're going to support you because we're the free world. And, you know, that statement is archaic at this point because we're not the free world. And I found that that duplicity quite shocking. And I think I was maybe the only one that noticed. But when you get up and say, well, you know, the free world is behind you, well, is that the same free world that's trying to put the opposition political figure in jail for 700 years? Or is it, you know, which free world is it?
Was there anybody there from Trump's camp?
I did not. Well, there were, you know, I don't want to say hangers on, but players of old, I should say, you know, mm-hmm. McCasey was there, Michael McCasey, who was mm-hmm. with Rudy and others, but not any big. Pence was there, but these are all.
I don't consider Pence part of the Trump
campaign either. So I really wanted to ask him what he was given in Congress that he put in his pocket when he drove the state through Trump's heart.
You still stuck on that. Still are stuck on that. Well, tell me, what's the difference? Because you were over there last year for the conference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what do you see as the difference now? Because since Rossi's, you know, his helicopter went down, I mean, it must be different, a different conversation.
There's a realization that the regime is much weaker because of Raisi's death. I mean, Raisi was the executioner. He literally was the man who pulled the levers to kill 30,000 of the resistance within a few weeks in 1988. They just emptied the prisons, hung them over swimming pools, and literally drained the blood in the swimming pool.
Yeah. So he was a pretty gruesome guy.
Yeah, and he he became the leader of the country. Obviously, the mullahs are behind it, but the fact that he's gone and Soleimani's gone because of Trump, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these main figures are gone. So I think there's a realization the regime is very weak, and there's an optimism that, you know, something can be done about it in the short run. Because I'll tell you, these people, the MEK is organized. They have support all around the world. They have assets. I don't know where the money is coming from, but they have a lot of it. Mm-hmm. The production value here was in the millions, tens of millions at the conference all over the world. Wow. And so there is something behind this movement. It's organized. They have a plan of freedom and free markets and tolerance and, free speech and assembly and all of that that they want to bring in to Iran. And Rajavi, Maryam Rajavi, who's the leader of the president-elect, you know, she's somebody who can do that. So I was speaking with her last night. So it's going to be fascinating, but I think there's more of an optimism this year that something actually could happen in the near term.
What's the conversation inside the conference about what's happening with Gaza and in Israel and in relationship to Hezbollah, Lebanon, and Iran?
You know, that's a touchy subject here because, you know, this is a Muslim group. And I think there's a realization they would have to work with Israel, but I don't see a lot of overt support. And I think that's just because of the facts on the ground, because they would lose support if they did. And so, but I have heard a lot of talk with other journalists who are here saying that a lot of the Jewish populations around the world are saying, you know, you must deal with this group because they are the only real option to take down Iran, which would remove the support for all the proxy armies with the Ring of Fire around Israel, which is about to cook off in the north, especially is looking very, very severe, that something could really explode there in the north and south Lebanon, which we're keeping an eye on, of course.
Right. And I guess it was two weekends ago, there was something like 100,000 people left that part, the southern part of Lebanon. They evacuated. So, I mean, they're setting it up for, you know, another moon crater move, however it shakes down. Pardon me. I guess I'm getting Lars cold. Who? So, because you're in Paris, which is one of my, you know, favorite cities in the world, the Olympics are happening next month. So have you seen, are you hearing any chatter among the journalists at the conference who, not that every sports journalist is going to be at this conference, but just overall, are they talking about the new rules that are going to happen, which I think are fascinating because the Olympics is coming out for the first time, dictating to everybody, and this is across the world because NBC will cover it for the United States, BBC will cover it for England, and all the other broadcasters in every other country of the world will be on the ground in Paris, and now they're telling us who are going to be covering the Olympics that we cannot use the word biological man or biological woman. Okay, we can't use those terms because, everybody is one and the same on whatever team that they're on, this is the first time I've ever heard of the Olympics dictating to, you know, any news organization. So is anybody even talking about that this week?
You know, I haven't heard that come up. I think everybody's focused on Macron and what will happen to him. Yeah. But obviously the focus will turn after this conference is over and after the election. I am in Roissy, which is a suburb outside of France near the airport or outside of Paris. And this is an Olympic park. I will just show you. But it has like Muhammad Ali way over there. And, you know, you probably can't see it, but there's signs of Olympic rings and all of that. So it is on people's minds, but
It's not the focus.
I mean, people want change here, you know.
Do you have any journalists from Germany? Netherlands? Have they shown
up? There's a lot of politicians. It's a mix. You know, the MEK has worked for years to put together alliances and relationships with current politicians, former politicians. And so there's a lot of Estonian, Netherlands, your EU members of parliament, former and old, or, you know, former and current, and that are talking about this issue. I do have, you know, one of the best speakers at the conference was Betancourt, who was the senator in Colombia back in the day. And she put out some interesting comments yesterday. I was going to write it up and haven't done it yet. But she said the infiltration into Western governments has prevented them, by Iranian operatives, has prevented them from confronting Iran. And we saw this in the Biden administration, where one of the guys actually lost his security clearance because he was feeding information to Iran, and a lot of others that are suspected. And this has delayed the stopping their nuclear program. It's delayed support for the resistance. And she called the regime a monster on the verge of extinction.
Interesting.
International, that there's international support for the change in Iran, that they have, the Iranian intelligence services have deployed aggressive strategies to smear the resistance, provide false info, prevent freedom from coming to the country. The Biden regime is enabling this whole issue. And she was indignant that, I think it was Le Monde, that the French papers were essentially mockingbird media for the Iranian regime, the talking points of the RSCG, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and that the women really are the ones leading the resistance in Iran, and a lot of very, very young women. And there's been a lot of talk of them being murdered, and that, you know, because they wouldn't wear their hijab right or whatever.
Right.
So these women and young kids actually have no future, and they know that in this regime. So they're really risking it all. It's really fascinating to watch.
Well, they had all those riots across Iran because of the young woman who was arrested and then later died in custody. And so that was set off, what, 18 months ago? So I can see that. And if you have no future, you have nothing to lose if you're exactly. A young person in a you know, repressed regime like that. What is what are they saying about the EU? I mean, is anybody talking about the level of corruption at the EU, you know, that you're hearing at all?
Well, of course, some of my sources here, which are setting up some of the interviews with me with populist leaders, are very aware of what's happening inside the EU. You know, von der Leyen looks like she's going to get another term. And really, the parliament, the EU parliament, even though there was a lot of movement toward the populist movements inside the parliament, that's not where the power lies. The power lies in the EU Commission. And they have it very, very controlled, just like in the U.S., in the Congress, and down to even the county level in the U.S., where you have tight control over any new people coming in. And so they're essentially a Politburo for Europe, and very leftist, very Marxist. And so that is where the power lies. And people here are concerned that those are the ones pushing for the war in Ukraine to continue and to get bigger. And that's why Macron is pushing for French troops to go into Ukraine. So this is a globalist effort. One thing that's happened is the big light has been shown on all their strategies and how they're doing this. So you can see exactly what they're doing really across Europe and in the U.S. to enable this globalist agenda of whatever it is, you know, forever wars, oligarchy, money laundering, you know, theft on a massive scale, slave classes. I mean, all of that is very easy to spot.
So I want to know, because Biden was just over there for the G7, and, you know, we are the ones that are financing the war for the most part in Ukraine. What are these people, what are the journalists telling you in terms of the perception of somebody like Biden and what we're doing? Because the impact on the ground in Europe is they feel, you know, Poland is overrun. I mean, and we know that we have people, Ukrainian refugees, you know, in Switzerland, for instance. I mean, they're in France. What are people talking about the impact? Because it's just like in the United States when we have the illegal, but these are not illegals. These are welcoming people. But under the Schengen Agreement, each country in Europe has to pay for all the social services for the refugees that come into their countries. What are they saying? I mean, how do they perceive Biden? How do they perceive the U.S. and what's going on? Because this is because, you know, nobody is seated at a table for peace. We just keep the U.S. just keeps on financing this war.
There's a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, like control of the narrative here. It's very controlled. Mm. So people are very afraid to go against the narrative. So the Ukraine thing is kind of like the vaccine.
You don't talk about it.
I mean, or you say the right thing. You don't go against the narrative. But I find that, you know, a lot of American journalists and people are coming over here and talking about it. And that just is like it releases a floodgate of emotions and laughter. And when, you know, Tucker was making fun of, you know, all these politicians recently in Australia, I think the same thing there, where that's what's happening here. When you actually talk about it, they all just start laughing and say, yeah, we know. It's like the old Soviet saying, you're lying, we know you're lying, and we know we're lying, you're lying, and we're still lying. So that's kind of how it is here. Which is scary because, you know, they fought two world wars over this stuff that we had to get into. And it's the same thing. I mean, I don't know if it comes from this history of aristocracy and serfdom or whatever, but it is, it's shocking to see that people are scared to be truth tellers.
So the elephant in the room, we have to talk about it because of the debate. Is anybody talking about the presidential debate on Thursday night in Europe?
They're all asking me, did you watch the debate? I said, yeah, I watched the debate. And they're like, what'd you think? So, you know, I said, well, to me, it was contrived. I think they're ready to throw Biden under the bus. And this was a way to do that. They just let him go up and make a fool of himself so that they can put the machinery in motion to get rid of him. That's my thought. But I know there's a lot of different factions inside the left or whatever you want to call this criminal government. I mean, some of them are pro Biden. I mean, obviously, there's still some people who want to maintain their positions of power. I mean, think about it. If you ran a massive criminal organization and then you were going to lose power and lose control of preventing yourself from being prosecuted, it's like Yeltsin in Russia. I mean, that's why Putin came in, because he made a deal with Yeltsin. I won't prosecute you. I'll let your family get out with all the money. And so there's something similar going on here. And you see the Bidens kind of like jockeying for power to, I'm sure they're trying to cut a deal right now, Jill and.
Well, but, you know, Jill, I've been told in the last, you know, couple of days that behind the scenes, she is very upset because she didn't think that the spotlight would be underneath the family finances at this point in her life. At the same time, she enjoys being first lady. So even though it was a horrendous performance by President Joe Biden the other night, it was 10 days of practice, and they, you know, for we all knew that he was in bad shape. We were talking to people, our sources, who were meeting one-on-one or in small groups with, you know, Joe Biden in the Oval Office. So, you know, the staff may say he's okay, but then other people, you know, would meet with him that would tell me, you know, he's in really bad shape, Christine. And so he may have his good days and his bad days. That makes sense. I mean, the day after the debate, I think it was in North Carolina or in Virginia, he looked like a different man, but he had a teleprompter and it wasn't, you know, 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, when you get older, sometimes 10 o'clock at night seems like 2 o'clock in the morning, but however you shake it, I think that my takeaway of the debate was, having covered Joe Biden since the 1980s, he's a nasty politician behind the scenes. And that really showed. And I thought to myself, wow, he's not holding back at all. But
no,
he was also
the
truth of the matter was he also wasn't processing, because he made some horrendous errors. One being that the migration situation is 40% less under the Biden administration than it was under Trump. I mean, that's just a flat out lie. I mean, it's unbelievable. Under Trump, there were 15,000 unaccompanied kids every year. And under Biden, it's 135 unaccompanied kids. So, and we've never had, you know, 10 million people come into the United States over a 4-year period of time, ever, illegally, ever in the history. So right there, he got that wrong. Then when he falsely accused Trump of saying that Beau Biden was a loser and a sucker. He never said that. Matter of fact, he never said anybody in the Army or the Navy or the military were suckers and losers. That was a made up case. But that didn't process with Joe Biden. He just wanted to push back on it. I mean, and on the abortion, this is another thing I just want to put out there for people. When Trump talked about late term abortion, mm-hmm. Biden pushed back and said, no, that isn't what Roe versus Wade means. What people don't understand is in the 1990s, Bill Clinton signed a piece of legislation for late term abortion. So the Clinton administration was totally in favor of that. So Biden just didn't have his facts about obvious. I mean, immigration works against him. Abortion should be working in favor of the Democrats because of the decision at the Supreme Court for Roe versus Wade. But I thought it was very interesting that he just couldn't get his act together for 2 minutes. That's why, I mean, and the behind the scenes, that is why Anita Dunn and Ron Klain and Biden's camp wanted to have this format. Because instead of 15 minutes under the debate commission, it's 2 minutes, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 1 minute in this type of format. And after 10 days of rehearsals, it was a flop.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the question is on everybody's mind is, will it hurt Trump or help Trump? I guess it depends on who comes in to replace Biden. I don't see how they can allow this to continue. And I think every day that goes by, it gets worse for the ballot issues. I'm not an expert on that, but some people are saying in Wisconsin, and it's already too late. I don't know. And that's a swing state. That's what I've read. I don't know.
They can break the rules. Don't forget that. This is an administration.
Of course.
That violates the rules and everything's litigated in court. It doesn't matter what the policy is. So, anybody that makes money off this are lawyers and political consultants who sit in the room. Mm-hmm. That's it. Everybody else, you know, it's a waste of time and money because the lawyers are going to do whatever they want to do. And there's an army of them that are out there. All right, Todd, what do you think? I think the next shoe that's going to drop is going to be the vice presidential pick by Trump.
True.
Do you think that's going to happen sooner rather than at the convention?
He said it was going to happen before the convention, didn't he?
He did at one point, and then he said he was going to wait until the convention. So I don't know. People were talking here in the States on Thursday night that maybe he would make the announcement during the debate. And I thought, no, I think he wants to see how it goes. If it went well for him, why use that carrot? And he didn't use that carrot. So, you know, I think it's interesting. That's all. I think it's interesting. Pompeo's name, you know, has come up with some people, but he really hasn't shown up on the list whatsoever. So if he's over there, I don't think he's going to be part of, you know.
I forgot about this. I talked to someone here who was actually helping in the debate preparation for the president, for President Trump.
Oh.
And the advice they gave them was to just let Biden talk. Be nice and just let Biden talk because he's going to bury himself. And that's exactly what happened. If you notice, Trump was very, in the beginning at least, very calm and no real facial expressions. You know, later it changed, but I think he followed that to some extent.
Well, I think it was at the beginning. I mean, in my estimation, Biden lost it in the first, 3 minutes, but in his opening. But I think it was very interesting. I think when it was the first time when he got to that Medicare statement, mm-hmm. we won Medicare. And that's when Trump said, I don't know what he said, and I don't think he knows what he just said. And then that kind of changed the tone of the debate at that point in time. I thought it was extraordinary television. I couldn't even believe it. I figured he would be more prepared than that. And then simultaneously, because I was watching the CNN version, and then plus I would dip in on the internet to what Bobby was doing, which my focus was on the CNN, but then I later went back that night and re-looked at Bobby's. And I thought Bobby Kennedy did a pretty good job. I mean, he looked a lot saner than everybody that was going on at the stage. And I was surprised. I think that night he had about, I think 3.4 million, something like that. The next morning he had nearly 9 million. Now he has about 11 million or 10 million viewership. compared to, I think it's collectively with the other networks because they.
That's on his debate he did alone on Twitter, correct?
That's right. That's right. And it's, so it keeps growing. So people are looking at it. But it's interesting when you do the numbers, it's about 56 million collectively because CNN gave the feed to other networks. Collectively, that has 56. Bobby has about 10 or 11 million. And that's a pretty good showing because, you know, for the numbers, if nothing else. And it was different. He had John Stossel did a good job. I mean, he played moderator. I was highly critical that CNN had done this debate because I thought it was corrosive journalism. But I have to give it to Tapper. Seemed pretty fair because we all know he hates Trump. And Donna Bash doesn't particularly care for Trump. But I thought they were pretty fair with the questions overall, editorially. All right. What did you think?
I think that was the feedback everybody gave, and that also lends credence to the theory that, you know, well, maybe because they were actually not that against Trump also, which means maybe they were acting like real, you know, moderators as opposed to trying to get Trump. Maybe they were trying to let Biden make mistakes. So I don't know.
It's hard for me to think that people around Biden, if they really love the guy, why doesn't somebody sit down and say, hey, this needs to stop? This is what I think is interesting. If Biden doesn't have somebody around him that can do that, that's not good for the country. It's a disaster. But I also, I interviewed Tony Lyons the other day, and I think this is a question we all need to ask. Pardon me. When we see something, a performance like that, and we know his age, and we know it's not just a cold, is that a national security issue? Should somebody in that, you know, and that's something, it's not just 4 years from now. Is somebody in his condition mentally, because he's not all there, if you're not there for that 3 a.m. phone call?
Well, it's a little worse than that. Not in the governmental sense, but in the media sense, all these people after the debate acting like, oh my God, he has dementia. Well, you knew that for the last 4 years and you just said nothing. So that is a fault of the Fourth Estate that has to be dealt with. And that's what we're trying to do, is really just bring truth. We don't care where it goes.
That's right. And sometimes. So what else can we talk about here, Todd? I mean, what else do you think is on the horizon?
Well, let me run a couple ads and then we'll come back. How's that?
Okay, great.
Contagion Kit is something new. Can you tell us about that and what's in it and what it's for?
Well, the Contagion Kit is specifically geared towards a respiratory virus. It mm-hmm. includes some of the medications that we've been talking about that are well known to be able to treat respiratory viruses. And mm-hmm. importantly, it includes a nebulizer, a mm-hmm. way to aerosolize a liquid medication so that you can breathe it into the lungs. Mm-hmm. Again, these kits are not meant to replace your doctor or a relationship with a doctor. They are not meant for you to fly solo. We have telemedicine visits mm-hmm. available if you have any questions about the symptoms you're having. There is a booklet in there as well that supports and kind of coaches you through what symptoms you may be having from something. So these aren't meant to be a panacea to replace mm-hmm. everything in medicine. It's a way, however, for people to feel and to be prepared, to be at the ready, to be more resilient, and to be more immune from the sorts of intrusions that we saw during COVID, where your insurance company or your own doctor or the pharmacist or the pharmacy was refusing to let people get a hold of medication.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually. And keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, so we're back with, and I wish I was over there in Paris with you, Todd. I mean, it really is one of my favorite cities in the world. Our friend Steve Bannon is going to go to jail tomorrow for the next 4 months. So how political do you think that was in terms of timing?
Obviously, they want him off the playing field. He's extremely effective. Mm-hmm. You know, has a lot of enemies, but is extremely effective. So no matter. Kind of like Roger Stone, one of those kind of figures. And I think they wanted him off prior to the election. But, you know, he's built an army. I don't think that it's going to make that much of a difference. I think it's going to be, you know, he's going to be just like Trump. I mean, they're going to make him into a martyr.
He did an interview with Tucker the other night, and he talked about how he had served in the Navy. And he was basically serving his country when he goes to jail for the next 4 months. So he'll be out on, I guess, Halloween, October 31st.
Amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing timing. And Peter Navarro, you know, who I would assume may stand in for Steve, and Steve's in prison on the war room. But he gets out, I think it's the end of this month, or maybe it's in a couple of days. But, I mean, it's soon. It's soon. He's serving his four-month terms, too.
I think what is really interesting, and we're involved in this, is the media landscape. You've got Bannon going to jail. I mean, that's going to impact War Room. I mean, he's the star. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of subs and very smart people, but he's really the only one that can bring the fire and get people activated, at least my opinion on that show. So, I mean, he's got a lot of...
When Peter has substituted for him, he can do it. But the younger folks that are around him, I don't know if that's possible. And I don't know who Steve is, you know, asked to stand in.
I'm sure Natalie Winters and Raheem and all of them will rotate post-Posobiec, and they'll rotate through. But I just think that he's the star. And so that will impact them. You've got Gateway in bankruptcy. I think it's a procedural issue to avoid, you know, lawsuit ramifications. You've got Epoch Times being sued in criminal, you know, accusations. I don't know the whole story there. And then you have Alex Jones being liquidated. So they're trying to take off people off the field prior to the election. And that, you know, throws a lot of weight on us at CDM.press. And we're going to continue pressing with global news coverage. You know, our tagline is global coverage without the globalist spin.
That's right.
Really what we're trying to bring. And, you know, we have a lot of enemies, too. In Georgia, the GOP doesn't like us at all. I don't really care. I mean, because we've exposed a lot of the corruption there. We're going to continue doing that because we want to expose the corruption. That's what journalists are supposed to do.
That's our job. Yeah. I mean, Pharma doesn't love me at all. But, you know, and I don't love them any more than they do me. But I think it's going to end. Don't forget about the Daily Beast. I mean, people are leaving there. We also
they're falling. I mean, they're going out of business, Christine. I mean, I think the Washington Post lost $80 million last year.
That's true. And we have an influx of, you know, we have a lot of people from the UK who are running some of our news organizations. The one person in the past who did very, very well in the United States was Tina Brown. But now we have different news organizations being run by people that have a different way of doing journalism because it's more tabloid. We know about all the scandals with the telephones and the hacking for years over in the UK. And some of those people have, you know, come across the pond and they have taken hold of some major news organizations. For instance, Mark Thompson was at the New York Times. He's now the president, CEO of, he's not the president, he's the CEO of CNN. And Mark was, before that, was at the New York Times. And before that, he had some scandals when he was at the BBC. Some criticism, not scandals. Criticisms when he was at the BBC and Channel 4. So it's a different way of doing journalism in the UK than it is if you come up through the ranks here in the United States. And that, I don't know, I'm interested to see how that plays out in this election. I'm fascinated by this because when some of these guys have taken hold of the ropes at the New York Times or at CNN or at ABC News in the past, as we well know, the guy who used to be the president of ABC News was hired by the January 6th committee by one of the guys, David Buckley, who signed the 51 letter saying that the laptop was Russian disinformation. And in fact, he was under contract with the CIA at the time he signed the letter, and he was the staff director for the January 6th document drama select committee cover. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting things happening behind the scenes in terms of the players and where people are positioned, you know, going into this election. And I don't know if it's going to be fair. I really don't know if it's going to be fair for America.
I think a lot of these journalists who have lied for 4 years and they know they have, or at least lies by omission, you know, they're being called out. And I don't see how they're going to have a lot of credibility. They still will with the people who are not awake to what's happening, you know, the normies, as they say. Mm-hmm. But that size is dwindling also. So I'm not sure how much impact they're going to have. If they keep saying, you know, Russia, 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 who's going to listen?
Well, they can't do that. Now, I'm getting a kick. I actually get a kick out of this. Since the debate, it mm-hmm. seems to be some of the old guard journalism who are saying Joe has to go. Well, where have you been for the last 4 years, folks? Mm-hmm. Where have you been in terms of the crime? Where have you been in terms of the Russiagate? Where have you been in terms of January 6th? I mean, everybody knows, and on the TV side, when the January 6th committee wanted to stage this hearings and also get it on primetime television, the scripts were set. They were given to the networks when the January 6th committee was negotiating with the networks to put it on. So this was all jointly done. And nobody at the time was talking about the Chiron that was in the room and the tight-knit of it and the one-sidedness of the presentation. Because in our business, that's what we call it. It's called a point of view, a docudrama point of view. They're considered legitimate. At the same time, this was presented as a select committee on Capitol Hill. That should not ever have been a docudrama. It should have been run like a regular select committee where you have both sides of the aisles testifying.
Well, that's coming out now that, you know, that Paul Ryan had the dossier in 2016 that Pelosi was stopping, you know, the guard from coming in and it was all her operation. I mean, all of that's out now.
But whether or not, you know, the interesting thing is, Todd, how many times have we ever seen a news organization say, oh, we made a mistake? It's very, very rare, even over the COVID vaccinations. You know, the New York Times did a piece several weeks ago. Oh, are there COVID vaccs injured? I mean, we've been reporting on this for 3 years. I mean, They studiously ignored because they bought the narrative because they believe people who are psychopaths.
Well, I think that, you know, I think we differ a little bit. I think they were involved in it and working as propagandists in that. But they have people don't trust them now, I can tell you. Nobody trusts, you know, the Washington Post is firing all the reporters and hiring AI. I mean, so literally, except for a small few. Because
what do you think that's? I mean, why would people buy into AI for reporting? Why would they buy into? Because AI is going to be run by that which is processed inside this machine, so it's not going to be based upon truth, and there's not going to be a relationship. Oh, what are people going to say? I have a relationship with the robot number one at the Washington Post.
You know, our tagline is "Human reporters, no machines." We're going to keep that. going, because why would you trust? And you look at ChatGPT, or look at Google, whatever the name of their one that had all the founding fathers is, you know, with black skin. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't trust what's pro. You get garbage in, garbage out. So
that's right.
There are some AI models that I think are more free that are being built, but how do you know what's being used? And so I think they're just glorified search engines. I think the hype is just that hype. You know, I lived through the Y2K hype. I lived through the internet hype. I mean, it was all hype and it all crashed and burned. And you're starting to see the cracks. And yes, it will make a difference. Yes, it will make our lives easier. But I don't see any evidence yet that it's going to, you know, destroy humans in my lifetime. I mean, I think it will. But you have to not be susceptible to it and make your own decisions and search out good news platforms like CDM.
So you've spent almost 20 years on Wall Street. Do you think the AI is just one of these, you know, it's a hula hoop and the pet rock type of thing for making money, and then at some point it's going to fizzle down?
There's a lot of capital behind it. It will transform society, but I'm not sure that I believe that it's going to be as dangerous as people say. I think maybe that's the wrong word, is comprehensive. You know, you search now for something on the internet and you get an AI response, and you have to go down and look for the links that will actually maybe give you something different. And everybody knows Wikipedia is not, a lot of it's not true. A lot of it's, you know, slanted. Right. And so I think the same thing will be with AI. It's going to be slanted. And smart people, of course, you know, 80% of the country maybe not won't look at it, but the people in the upper echelons of power and thinking individuals, critical thinkers, need to not rely on that. You know, if it wants to help me make an order at a restaurant easier, great. Or, you know, write a will, great. But, you know, I'm not going to use it to rule my life.
Well, people have to understand, in 2005, Wikipedia could not even be a footnote at most universities in the United States. By 2010, it was accepted. So the ethics dropped, you know, in terms of education. And we also know that the woman who was head of the foundation is now at Wikipedia at the time, you know, just recently. It's lower standards. And then they put her as the CEO of National Public Radio. You know, which is another news institution where Yuri Berliner came out and talked about, you know, how NPR is so slanted and that they're not allowed. They bought into the Trump derangement syndrome of reporting, where everything was to slam the Trump administration. And so the biasness has been exposed from within, I think, at a lot of these news organizations, which I think is a good thing. I think it's about time that the wheels come off and the truth gets out there, no matter how hard that they all try to hang on to the narrative and say, oh, we didn't know. No, you knew. You chose to look the other way for whatever reason, whether it's partnership.
So accountability is what you're talking about. And that's what's has to come.
In
pharma, in medicine, in legal, in the news organizations, in government, in the military. We have to have accountability and to right the ship. That's the only way. And we've been talking about that for a long time.
I think I've called burn the ships and tank the stocks behind the scenes.
So that's what we need to push for. And I find it fascinating, all the people that are starting to say, well, and kind of tell little truths, you know, like Cuomo on, I think it was Bill Maher the other night, that said, well, you know, Trump's trial should have never happened. And the audience was silent. Because they want to get ahead of this accountability and make it seem like they are honest, reputable, critically thinking individuals when they're not. So you're seeing that a lot, where people are starting to come out and tell truths across the board.
Little tiny ones, step by step, as I said. All right, so I have to ask you my last question, because I know that you've got to get back to the conference. What about the trans targeting kids in Europe? Is there any evidence that you're hearing from anybody? And if you haven't heard anything about that, can you ask some of the journalists? Because I'm very fascinated about that, because we know Tavistock closed down the clinic in London, which was a trans clinic. And we also have some people who were part of the LGB community coming out and speaking out against the TQIR plus community. So there's an internal fight that we're going to be reporting on within that community by people that are actually in there and who have worked at sex clinics here in the United States, who are in fact saying, you know, people need to understand that there's a black box warning on some of these puberty drugs that in fact could be a risk for blindness. So We have, you know, we've been talking to people over the last couple of months about these information that they think that everybody, every parent in America should know about, which I think is going to be very interesting for us to report on. But ask the people on the ground there, because I'm interested to know if it's happening in France the way it happened in England and the way it happened here in the United States.
I will do that. I haven't heard it. Again, it's one of those issues that they just don't want to talk about, which I find disgusting, frankly, when you're willing to put your kids at risk, but for your safety. So I haven't heard anything about trans, to be honest.
Do you think people are afraid to talk about some of these issues, Todd?
Yes.
Because is it because they won't be invited to another cocktail party, or is it because it's considered against the state?
You have what's going on here in Europe, across Europe, what happened in Germany in World War II, in Italy. It's the same thing.
Okay.
You know, people are just willing to go along, just leave me alone, I'll do what I need to do. And I find that disgusting. We don't have that in America so much. We do to some extent, but we don't have it like it is here. That's the difference.
Well, I think we did in 2020. I think people.
Well, we did,
it.
Yeah.
2020, we definitely had it. We definitely had
a lot of that moment. A lot of that was people just being lied to, you know, which happens in tyrannical governments. But at some point, you have to wake up. And I don't see the awakening going on here. Maybe it is with illegal immigration and the economy, but not with these other issues. There's still a lot of Ukraine flags. There's still, you know, people don't talk about the shots. So I don't know.
All right. Well, Todd, again, I'm envious. You're in one of my favorite cities that I love so much. So have fun, and I'll see you when you're on this side of the pond.
Thank you very much.